Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. This is Braden and Fitz with Braden Gall and Jason Fitz
on ESPN
102.5 The Game.
He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Windy City intern just rocking it. It's Braden and Fitz. Happy Monday morning to everybody.
Julian is back safe and sound. Julian, good to see you this morning, sir.
He did not wear a 10-gallon cowboy hat, so Dallas was not the experience for him.
Did you have a fried Twinkie?
No, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Texas State Fair, which I don't believe was going on this weekend.
No, I believe that's in October.
Yep, during the Texas-Oklahoma game. But at the Texas-Oklahoma game in Dallas, at the Texas State Fair, which is the largest state fair in the country, you can get fried butter, fried Twinkies, fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, fried Oreos.
All amazing. You can also get the hamburger on a Krispy Kreme, which is a very interesting. Like a cheeseburger on a donut sounds weird. Very delicious.
There's that diner down on 3rd Avenue that has those Krispy Kreme burgers
right across
from FGL.
See, that is now I'm going to go down there. That's what I'm going to do.
So what was the highlight of the weekend trip to Dallas?
Well, I mainly went down there to start scouting locations for my upcoming Food Network show, Fooding with Julian, which will be debuting.
Fooding.
Yeah, Fooding.
Yeah, I like that.
We'll be debuting in mid-October, going all the way up until the new year. We're going to have 8 episodes. I'm very excited.
Nice.
So I was going and checking out locations for the second season that will be hopefully airing in April.
When do you guys begin production on that?
Probably sometime around November.
Gotcha.
So, yeah,
gotcha.
Checked out two.
Fooding.
Yep. Booting with Julian. Wow. Checked out two of the top Yelp barbecue places in town, Lockhart Smokehouse over in Bishop Arts District.
Nice.
And the Pecan Lodge.
Yeah, that one's
over
pretty.
In Deep Ellum. Both were terrific. I have to tip my cap to the Pecan Lodge.
Yeah, they're pretty. Pretty famous.
Even though
place.
I could barely eat anything because I was.
Did you drive by the house that Jerry built at any point? Did you go by AT&T Stadium?
No, I don't even know where it's at. I was trying to like find it when
Arlington.
I was like coming down, like from the like when we were landing, and like I couldn't see anything. I looked down the distance. It looked like there was a big building. So I was like, maybe that's it, but I'm not really sure.
What's really goofy and weird about flying into like big metropolitan areas in Texas? Mm-hmm. If you fly into Dallas or Houston or Austin, you will be able to see all of these different stadiums, and you're going, what are all these big stadiums? Like, why are there so many? They're all high school football stadiums. It's really interesting. If you fly into one of these big areas in Texas, you'll see, you'll go, oh my God, that looks like, you know, Floyd. That looks like MTSU Stadium. That looks like Bowling Green. Like that looks like, and no, they're all high school stadiums. 10,000 seats, 12,000 seats. And they just are these big things that the Friday Night Lights and you know, oh my God. Now Varsity Blues, like those aren't really that inaccurate when it comes to Texas high school football.
So I'm sure I've said this before, but I took a tour of AT&T when it first opened up, and we did like this, whoever I was playing for, this is years ago, you know, we did like an event for season ticket people and all that stuff, like before they actually opened the stadium. And the most interesting part of it, there are a couple of things. They had to spend a ton of money to redesign the glass on the outside of it because it was causing wrecks on the highway because of the reflectiveness on
it. Too shiny.
Number two, that was interesting to me, the largest collection of flat-screen televisions anywhere in the world, is it in one location, is it AT&T Stadium. And the third, and this really was the coolest part of it, if the entire state of Texas lost power, the generators at AT&T Stadium within 2 seconds will relight the stadium. And Jerry Jones' quote on that was, even if Texas is dark, we want to make sure God can watch the Cowboys. So there we go. There's your AT&T fact of the day.
Also, Jerry is an American icon.
The Hall of Famer.
And a Hall of Famer, apparently.
The best thing that happened to me this weekend was I met a guy who sounded exactly like Mike Winchell from Friday Night Lights, the movie.
Wow.
And he did like the movie quote for like the fourth down and goal and everything for us. It was
so
amazing.
So he's embracing this. Thank
oh,
you.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you buy him a drink for this performance? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Cool.
He was one of my friends' buddies. So
awesome.
Well, the biggest news for Julian.
I'm not sure what his name was. I just kept calling him Mike Winchell.
That's awesome. You just call him Wench at that point. The biggest news for Julian was being in Dallas. The biggest news around the NFL that affects really everybody, including the Titans, because we walked away Friday saying, what do the playoff hopes look like for the Dolphins? We're keeping sort of a side eye on all the rest of the AFC and what it means for the wild card. The Dolphins have signed Jay Cutler, Vandy's own, the pride and joy of Vanderbilt, if you will, to a one-year, $10 million contract. So Jay Cutler is expected to come in and be the starting quarterback because all reports were he wouldn't take any position or any opportunity that wasn't a starter. So darn the bad luck. We're going to lose the opportunity to listen to Jay Cutler, the announcer, But I guess we get to see Jay Cutler, the player. Do you like this?
Oh, and let's be very clear. Jay Cutler, the player, is significantly more entertaining than Jay Cutler, the broadcaster, at least in my estimation. And we talked a lot about what does the money mean on Thursday and Friday of last week. If they were going to go get Jay Cutler, at what cost does it make it a smart investment versus Matt Moore, which would be very cost affordable, or Colin Kaepernick, which of course brings its own distractions but could also be very cost affordable with maybe some upside. I think Jay Cutler at $10 million a year is a no-brainer. By far the best option the Dolphins could have come up with to try to at least put themselves in a position to contend for a playoff spot. Now, you may believe that the Dolphins, with or without Tannehill, were a team that maybe was taking a step back, that maybe they weren't. Either way, they were a playoff contender. If they're going to get to 8-8, that sort of puts you in playoff contention, give or take a game here or a game there. So I think Cutler, from a talent standpoint, an experience standpoint, a fit with Adam Gase standpoint, a financial standpoint, it all makes complete sense. I think it's a last ditch effort to try to maintain some levels of competitiveness for the Dolphins this year. Are they good enough to make the playoffs? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, could they get to 9-7 and be in the conversation? I think so with Jay Cutler, but are they going to win anything? Does he take them to a playoff winning situation? Probably not, because he's still Jay Cutler. But I think he's significantly better than any other option that they had. And Adam Gase, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what he does with Jay Cutler. He did have a good year with Jay Cutler that year. And I don't know. It's a good news for the it's good news for the Dolphins, and therefore for every other wild card team in the AFC. Sort of a, okay, well, this team's still pretty capable of being in the mix, and you're going to have to contend with them.
Can I make a snarky statement? Is it too early in the
morning? Is it about Jay Cutler?
Yes.
Absolutely, you can. I love snarky statements about Jay Cutler.
I'm just curious, you know, since it baffles me, it blows my freaking mind every time I walk in to Nissan Stadium and I see the Peyton Manning Colts jerseys that have been around, just because people are like, well, I love Peyton so much, even though he kicked the Titans' butt, I love Peyton. Are we now going to see Cutler Dolphins jerseys just swimming around Nashville?
No.
Are the Vandy Loyal, both of them, going to start going around and getting themselves some Dolphins Cutler jerseys?
Because I think there's a very different relationship between Vanderbilt fans in the city of Nashville and Jay Cutler, and Tennessee fans and the state of Tennessee and Peyton Manning.
Agreed.
I think Peyton Manning's almost universally loved, respected, revered, probably too much so in the state of Tennessee. Certainly with Vols fans, it's across the board, unanimous. I don't think that's the case with Cutler. I think that all the stories we know about Jay Cutler and his time here in Nashville and all that stuff, I think there's very much they had that one big game. I think they went up to Knoxville and won with Jay Cutler. I think they finished 5-7 that year. So it's not even like he got him to a bowl game. So I have to double check that, but there's he's a great player. I think the diehard Vandy fan loves Jay Cutler. I think the majority of Vandy fans are sort of, Zach Cunningham is their favorite player now.
Right.
You know, Chris Marv was one of their favorite players. Jordan Matthews is one of their favorite players. I think the James Franklin, Derek Mason era of players could be more beloved. I just think Cutler never really panned out as much as people thought he would. And he's kind of a jerk to people sometimes when he was in college. So I think there's a different level of appreciation or lack thereof from Vandy and Cutler.
I'm sure. I just I find the love affair and the hate affair, like, respectively. The love affair for Manning at times sort of blows my mind, and the hate affair for Cutler at times blows my mind.
Would the Miami Dolphins' biggest rival be the Patriots,
yeah.
No, it's New York Jets.
But the Patriots don't care about them, right?
Yes, it's the Jets.
It's a one-sided thing for the Patriots. So let's go with the Jets. I would not be
surprised. I didn't know that.
Like, it's always been the Jets.
As a Packers fan and fan of a team that has been a diehard rival of the Bears and Jay Cutler, whom we dearly love in a Chicago Bears uniform, I could see maybe a lot of Jay Cutler Dolphins uniforms in the Meadowlands or the new Meadowlands. So I could see that, just because we appreciate those interceptions we know you're going to throw in the fourth quarter.
So I will say, to that extent, a guy we both know and respect sort of made this point to me off the record that I think is interesting about Cutler, that it's no risk for the Dolphins because it makes the Dolphins fans feel like they're making a huge effort to win. And if for some reason he comes in and he just stinks, they did everything they could to be in a better position, and it put them in the position to get a much better draft pick from it, which comes to that whole tanking mentality that some people have. Now, I don't know. I mean, that would be a reach. It'd be a reach for me to think that they signed Cutler because they think Matt Moore is better than Cutler, which you'd have to have part of that argument, you know. Yeah. But
I know that there are certain individuals on this program that appreciate and like Matt Moore. I just don't think Matt Moore is a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I just think Jay Cutler is an enormous waste of talent. I'm sick of people like acting as if this is such a great signing when he's a losing quarterback. Either way, you have two losing quarterbacks on your roster. One of them is getting paid $10 million, potentially $13 million for the one time in his career he actually is able to fulfill the talent he's been given. But probably won't do that. So we can sit here and smoke up Jay Cutler's ass all you want, but he's still gonna. The Dolphins are going to the playoffs.
I think the Bears fans are the ones that are puckered up right now, because if Cutler comes in and destroys it for the Dolphins, Bears fans will quit life. Like, they will just quit everything.
Well, I realize you're doing that with effect, Julian, but to suggest that they couldn't go 9-7 with Jay Cutler is possible. Like, that's
it's possible.
It's definitely with it. I mean, the defensive line is pretty solid.
They're not going.
They
to
got
playoffs.
Good receivers. The offensive line, despite the loss at guard, is still not bad. They got Laremy Tunsil. I mean, there's a reason they went to the playoffs last year. I mean, I know the Titans smoked them, but I tend to agree that I don't think Jay Cutler wins you enough games to get to the playoffs, but he's certainly the best option you had, and the team's good enough to be competitive. So, take a shot. I'm okay. I'm with you. Take a shot. It's a good look for the institution or the program, that is.
Well, we might be overreacting to Jay Cutler, but there's a part of the Titans we saw at the scrimmages over the weekend and the work over the weekend that maybe can't be overreacted to. Maybe it really is a huge deal. We'll tell you what it is and why it's a reason for excitement. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guys, don't miss a single snap. Titans training camp is here. 102.5 The Game will be live from St. Thomas Sports Park. Brought to you by Comprehensive Pain Specialists. Now through August 17th, 3D and Jared and the GM are at live at open practices. So for the full open practice schedule, just visit thegamenashville.com. Get out there. You can see what the schedule is. And then you can go heckle the guys and enjoy some fun while you enjoy practice. We'll get into something key that you need to know about that might be a reason for excitement from the scrimmages over the weekend. Obviously, it's hard to take too much away, but we'll get into that in just a second. Before we do, Steven in Nashville wants to chime in on this whole Dolphins thing. Steven, thanks for calling, man. What do you got?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, I am a huge Miami Dolphins fan. So as far as Jay Cutler's concerned, who's the guy that's saying that we're not making the playoffs? Who's that?
That's me, Julian Council.
Julian Council, I'll follow you on Twitter, buddy. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you, man? Good morning.
So I'll tell you this. I'm not a huge Ryan Tannehill fan. I'm an overly crazy Jay Cutler fan. But I think people forget about our running game, and our defense looks great. But we got a guy named Cam Wake who's really good after the quarterback. Jay Ajayi didn't start every game last year, but he had three games over 200 yards. We beat teams like Pittsburgh, even though we lost in the playoffs. I think it's a little crazy, maybe. I know it's Jay Cutler, but just to write us out of the playoffs, my heart won't let me do.
Steven, hey, that's on you, Steven.
Steven, thanks for the call, man. But I'll say this. Like, the Bill Barnwell article that we've referenced a few times has Miami as the teams that were expected to take a step back after last year. They went 8-2 in games decided by 7 points or fewer. Statistically, typically, that means they take a step back in that afterwards. There was already an expectation from some in NFL circles that with Tannehill as their starter, 10-6 would be a stretch for this team. Also, the teams that around them are continuing to get better. So
I haven't seen anyone out there who knows way more about the NFL than me high on this team. Everyone's expecting to take a step back. So Tannehill's not their starter. Now you have Jay Cutler, who, I'll remind you, is a losing quarterback throughout his career as a starter. I don't see why they would even be there at the position to make the playoffs.
They also last year went 8-1 against teams that had a top 10 draft pick, and they went 1-4 against playoff teams. So they feasted on the poor last year.
And to Julian's point about Jay Cutler's right, there are only 4 seasons in his 11-year career has he had a not losing record. So I'm giving him an 8-8 season in this conversation. So four times he went 8-8 in his third year in Denver. Went 10-5 in 2010, 10-5 in 2012, and 7-3 in 2011. So all three of his winning seasons came back to back to back during the years where the Bears defense was just absolutely loaded with all that talent.
Also, good thing they still have Matt Moore on the roster, even though he's probably upset about the $10 million contract they gave Jay Cutler, because Cutler hasn't finished a complete season since 2009.
Now, all of
also
that...
True. Now, three of those were 15-game seasons.
Still.
So.
Not a they play, what, 16 games in NFL?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
One game. All right.
All of that to say, though, Stephen, to that, now that we've given you all the negative... if I were a Dolphins fan, I would feel better about the team today than I did on Thursday. I think that, you know, ultimately you have to feel better about at least having somebody coming in, and you look at it and say, hey, if the goal is to make the playoffs, and if you think you are in that window, I think that Jay Cutler, while he's not a barn beater at quarterback, you have to feel a little bit better about at least bringing the competition in, especially 1 year at $10 million. There's no risk.
And I don't think he's one of the only two players I think you could bring in right now off the street that don't get you any heat for not signing Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that if Tony Romo signs, people are going to go, okay, that makes sense. You should sign Tony Romo. I think Cutler, as much as we'd like to rip on him, I think Cutler is still the significantly better on-the-field option than Colin Kaepernick, so I don't have a problem with that. Anybody else, though, I might start saying, you know what, Colin Kaepernick deserves the opportunity.
The only heat that they can get is the fact that there's people in that office who wanted to reach out to Tim Tebow. Also, let's remember that Jay Cutler...
Wouldn't you just root for Tim Tebow to be there, though? Just
no.
As a sports radio
I want
person.
Tim Tebow just to enjoy playing baseball and just being a good analyst for college football. But also, let's remember Jay Cutler was not sought after in free agency. The only team that even seriously considered signing him are the New York Jets, who are going to go 0-16. So let's go ahead and all take that in, that Jay Cutler, not much of a hot commodity. So you could make the argument that, oh, so you want the guy that only the Jets wanted instead of Kaepernick.
Well,
who was retired from football.
I realize what you're saying, man, but you cannot tell me that you think Colin Kaepernick is going to give the Dolphins a better chance to win.
All I'm saying is Adam Gase got on his knees, looked to the skies, and begged the good Lord to deliver Jay Cutler from retirement to him. Instead of looking for the guy who, I guess, wants to play football still.
Yeah, but in that, he gets somebody...
I want to play football still, but it doesn't make me any good.
Yeah, and in that, he gets somebody he knows and somebody that knows his system and somebody that knows probably... the terminology they're still using for the most part. Somebody that...
He's thrown for 32,000 yards in the NFL.
Somebody that can come in and can immediately assimilate into whatever it is that Adam Gase wants to be done. So I don't have a problem with it. And I think, again, if I were a fan of a team, I won't even use my team because I don't want to create Pandora's box. If I were a fan of a team and my starting quarterback went down, I'd feel better about having Jay Cutler come in than having a backup, especially 1 year, $10 million. So
no question.
We'll see where it puts him. The scrimmages happened over the weekend, and there was one thing that really stood out, and it shouldn't surprise us. It's just the first time we've gotten to see it because you don't get to see a lot of special teams action to this level. But special teams came in, and Adoree Jackson was special. And I don't think this can surprise everything or anybody. I think that this is why he was drafted. He was drafted to be special when they put the ball in his hands and then to also see what he can do defensively. But the fact that he stood out at scrimmages and sort of made everybody look twice didn't really surprise me. And I think it's one of the things that Titans fans have a real reason to be excited about right now going into this season.
Yeah, and I we're not a fan of bragging about how right we are on this show, because sometimes we occasionally get things right. But we were on Adoree Jackson probably 2 weeks before the draft, as this should be a guy that they should look at in the first round, well before most people were talking about Adoree Jackson as a first-round player. He has more return touchdowns than anyone in the history of the NCAA. I mean, this guy is a special return guy. I have no idea what his impact on a play-by-play basis will be on defense. I don't know, but from all accounts, with Sean Sims is playing great in camp and really pressing him for that number two job, and that there's a chance that your starting two corners could be Logan Ryan and LaShawn Sims, and Adoree Jackson, your first round pick at corner, might be your nickelback. I mean, that's very possible. But the guy will automatically change your special teams, and when you combine that with all of the other things that the Titans organization has done to improve its special teams, you've got a good punter, you've got a good kicker, you now have addressed your coverage teams, which were awful last year in both kick and punt return. You went out and got two guys from the Raiders, right, that were essentially like just coverage players. Like, that's what they do. They're basically, the reason you signed them was to go cover kicks and punts, and they're very, very good at it. And so you've addressed your coverage skills, and now you've put in a guy back there that is absolutely spectacular when it comes to putting the ball in his hands in those return situations. And I just think Adoree Jackson, if there's one sure thing from this draft for the Titans that you're going to get out of the draft, it is – because now we got injuries with Corey Davis. We don't know if Adoree Jackson is going to start on defense. I think special teams is going to be significantly improved for this team and could be a big reason why they win a couple of extra games, because that's all you're looking for here for the Titans, is if everything is status quo, all you need is a couple of extra one or two games to win the division. And if you look at some of the game, I mean, the Houston game on the road was lost because of special teams. There's been a couple of situations where special teams cost you a game, and that's why the coach got fired, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into the season. So I think special teams are going to be much, much better this year. I think Adoree Jackson is going to be an absolute fan favorite, and I don't think you can overlook how big that third factor of the football world is going to play here. Special teams, I think it's going to be a huge impact on the team and could absolutely give them one or two games.
I've seen the power of it, and we've seen the power in the NFL last year of what Tyreek Hill was able to do just by putting the ball in his hands. And if Adoree Jackson can have that sort of effect every time the ball touches his hands on special teams, to me, whatever he does in the secondary at that point is just, that's just icing on the cake at that point. The danger for Adoree Jackson for this team, the benefit for this team is going to come from what he's capable of doing in changing field position and in just flat out being a touchdown machine.
Yeah, you don't want to overstate somebody's role like this, and Devin Hester is the greatest of all time in this category, but there is a Devin Hester quality to his ability. That's how good he is at that.
Well, we'll keep you updated on that. We want to get you updated on a really fascinating sort of, let's call it a straw poll, an unexpected polling of some Vandy people, and it was a strong statement about exactly where and how they want to watch football games. We'll tell you what was said. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, Julian, how do you feel about giving away some early morning freestyle?
I suppose.
All right, let's give away a ticket, a pair of tickets to see Dashboard Confessional and All American Rejects at Ascend Saturday, August 12th. So, Dashboard Confessional, All American Rejects.
Apparently, Jared Stillman's favorite band.
I was listening to that and I was like, I cannot believe Jared Stillman has never heard of Dashboard Confessional.
No, really? I'm talking about All American Rejects. Apparently.
He loves them.
Yeah, which is very Stillman.
But in that same conversation, he goes, "I've never listened to Dashboard Confessional." And Luke Rogers, the bringing some sanity to the conversation, was saying, "Just stay for the headlining act and watch Dashboard Confessional too, yeah. Please."
Well,
they're pretty good.
Caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5, going to get a pair of tickets, Dashboard Confessional, All American Rejects, Ascend Amphitheater this Saturday. Going to be fantastic. Tweet us, let us know how it goes. We love that. And maybe you can bump into Stillman and get
there.
Him fired up for it. So
he said he'll be there.
He will be there. The question is, will Vandy people be at a football game if the stadium is not on campus? You and I have talked about this a little bit over the course of just sort of giving our opinions over the course of the last couple of months. And it came together. The Tennessean has a really cool little look at it as they were doing, let's call it an informal investigation of how fans would feel. And I thought it was interesting because they were out there kind of roaming around with the fans, talking to fans at Door Jam.
Adam Sparks and Joey Garrison, both guys that do great work for the Tennessean.
And so they were out at Door Jam and just informally asking people that are, and this is, you know, when you think about Door Jam, it's essentially the big mega fans there meeting and greeting players and getting pictures and doing that whole fun experiencing. So this is a good group of people to be polling.
Fun experiencing.
They're doing some fun experiencing. And it's the right group of people to be polling because they're big enough fans that they're at Door Jam. And according to their article in the Tennessean, which you should read on Tennessean.com, pretty good, it said that no one they talked to, not a single person, was in favor of an off-campus stadium. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and of course, within that same conversation, there are a few fans that said, but you know what, we're diehards, we're going to go wherever. It doesn't mean we have to like it. And essentially, again, it was unanimous, essentially. Totally a straw poll, just kind of casually asking fans, but you know, when two reporters are out canvassing fans at a fan event that is for the diehard Vandy fan, I think you found yourself a target audience. And for them to sort of ask, and I feel this way. No, I don't. I'm not sure what the right answer is financially for the Board of Trustees at Vanderbilt and John Ingram and the MLS side of this conversation, which is obviously a big part of this, right? Like, they would build a joint stadium on the fairgrounds. It would be MLS and Vandy football. Would you want to do that? I personally have an issue just philosophically with college football stadiums not being on campus. It just doesn't feel right. The only place it actually sort of kind of works is the Rose Bowl. And the Rose Bowl is the stinking Rose Bowl. So,
right.
And even then, at 90-plus thousand seats or whatever it is, they don't. UCLA has a really good team and doesn't sell that stadium out because it's so big and 45 minutes from campus. The Miami Dolphins now have this spectacular renovated stadium that's really cool and gorgeous. The Miami Hurricanes play there, and it's still, they have a tough time drawing fans because it's so far off campus. There's just a togetherness about a college campus that fosters and creates a fun, great, awesome college football atmosphere. So I'm a big believer in a stadium being on campus. They have a great location for it right now. They would have to tear it down and build it right on that location where the Vanderbilt Stadium is currently. But that is a perfect location. It's tied into the baseball field. It's tied into Memorial Gym. It's tied into a developing and sort of growing West End with bars and restaurants and shops that keeps continuing to grow and develop. You're right by the park. You're right on campus. There's just a beautiful, perfect sort of synergistic element to where that location is. I how you build it, what you build, that's all very important. But to move it across town to the fairgrounds, you know, if you're expecting a couple of thousand kids to buy tickets and walk to the game, you're probably going to lose that part of it. It may not affect the guys who buy the suites, the men and women who are spending lots of cash on suites, which is, again, your target audience here. Maybe it doesn't affect them. But by all accounts, the Vanderbilt fans spoke loud and clear on Saturday at Door Jam, which is a great event, by the way. And they said, listen, we don't want to move this off campus. We want to be on campus. And I tend to agree with them from a college football philosophical standpoint.
Well, and there's also going to have to be a conversation at some point about, because for all of the talk of, well, we could combine it with an MLS bid here and we combine it with an MLS bid there, if this team doesn't get an MLS bid, what does Vandy decide to do with their stadium? I mean, are they just going to wait, see if they can get an MLS bid in a couple of years and then try again? I mean, that's sort of a precarious situation to be, where it feels like Vandy's not driving their own stadium as much as whatever's happening in the MLS is driving it with some sort of a compromise built around it. That doesn't necessarily feel as good, I think, to fans in that process.
Well, and Julian can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I feel like the MLS also wants an MLS. They would prefer an MLS-only venue. They would be happier with a soccer-dedicated
facility. They want a
soccer-specific
stadium.
So in that sense, and again, John Ingram is sort of the pivot, is the nexus sort of come-together point on this, because he's on the Board of Trustees for Vanderbilt and also now the majority owner of Nashville SC, the USL club that's going to start next year. They have they have to have a stadium no matter what, because they're going to start playing games next year. So they have to have a stadium. So it seems pretty simple to build the USL stadium, make sure it's at the right location for future growth, for an MLS potential expansion bid, and then have Vanderbilt handle their own thing. Mm-hmm. Because Vanderbilt's got the money. If they want to put $100 million into a new stadium, they've got the money to do it. It's just a matter of whether or not they want to do it or not. John Ingram could reach into last night's suit pocket and pull out $100 million for a stadium. So they have the money to do it on both sides of things. Now, I know the city has upped their bid to try to help build the USL soccer MLS / whatever you want to call it stadium on the fairgrounds. I think it would be cool to have both the fairgrounds developed and a new stadium on campus. I realize that costs a lot of money, and people need to sort of sign off. A lot of important people need to sign off on that kind of stuff. But that strikes me as the best situation for Vanderbilt and the best situation for the Nashville SC and then a future MLS bid. I don't know why you couldn't do both. And clearly the fans have spoken, and the fans want their own stadium on campus.
Well, so, what's going to be interesting to me about John Ingram is that John Ingram, as you said, he can pull $100 million. Like, he walks up and says,
just $4.5 billion.
Yeah, can you break this $100 million bill for me? But you don't get to that point without being great at business. And part of this conversation that I think is being lost by everybody that's having a passion conversation is the business conversation. He's not in the business of just throwing out $100 million for a stadium here and $50 million for a stadium there. There has to be a profit line on it at some point. Like, there has to be some sort of a business reason for it where you look at it and say, okay, I understand why I'm investing, what I'm investing in, how I can either make money for it or how it so dramatically helps the city that it's worth me losing money on it. That's a very difficult question to be answered at this point about a Vandy football. Like, a Vandy football stadium would be, it's either going to be a profit project or it's got to be a heartstrings project.
And that's where I think most college football boosters fall. Now it's different for the soccer situation. I think the soccer situation has to be about making money. It has to be about creating a successful product and marketing it and growing it to the point where you generate revenue. It has to be a financial decision. College football boosters, they spend lots of money on things just to get the joy of sitting in their own suite and loving the game and watching a team win. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a different like when you give $7 million to the University of Alabama, you don't really get $7 million back in return. You just get a suite with your name on it at Bryant-Denny Stadium, and you get to watch Bama hire coaches like Nick Saban.
Yeah, which I don't disagree with, but I don't think that you wake up John Ingram today suddenly so passionate that you want to put money in when that just hasn't been the MO around Vandy football in general. And also one difference between, let's say, the Ingram family and many other booster families around the country is the Ingram family has their hand in 100 different ways in Nashville that they're doing that. I mean, from the symphony that they have been a huge part of funding to sports, the Ingram family has been mixed in entertainment and culture in a way that it's not like they're devoid in town of ways that they can feel that they've contributed. So
but he loves his Vanderbilt football, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, that sometimes that passion, again, when it comes to SEC football, there are people that spend lots of money for nothing else than a seat at the stadium and an opportunity. What did we hear from the Ole Miss? We had a conversation. I think Neil McCready said, there's a lot of guys that just want to spend a bunch of money so that they can say, hey, on Monday morning on the golf course, we talked to coach yesterday.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that Vanderbilt has that sort of kind of, you know, weird booster coach love and relationship. That there are some of them, but there's a lot of people that spend a lot of money on SEC donations that are for no other reason than to have access to the football coach.
Yeah, I just think it's idealistic to think that suddenly they're going to come running out of the woodwork for this. But speaking of a lot of money being spent, a lot of money it could be spent at Vandy's football stadium, and it has nothing to do with the Doors and everything to do with who they're playing. There's one opponent particularly on the schedule this year. It's going to make that school and everybody a lot of money in the process. We'll tell you what we're talking about next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. So, Vandy in general, smart school, smart kids, smart fans, right?
Why are you stereotyping them?
You know what? That's just, I'm gonna lump them all into one big apple basket.
Occasionally, there are good stereotypes, apparently.
And my apple basket is full of all of the good apples, all right? None of the bad apples, all of the good apples. Right. And they're smart, and darn it, people like them.
Jason Fitz's apple basket.
The
new Twitter account.
It's just coming on in with a little smile on my face and all high quality good apples that everybody's proud to get to associate with. That's my apple basket. So my apple basket has a lot of Vandy in it, and so I start to think about that, and I think Vandy people are smart. They understand the economics of this process, and there's going to be the opportunity for many of them to make a lot of money and take advantage, let's say, of people that might not be as educated on the Vandy season ticket process, right? Because the report out in the Tennesseum shows that the secondary market tickets, because they're not available, you can't just go buy them by themselves yet. Secondary market tickets for Alabama are available already, starting at $130. $130 for bad seats because Alabama never comes to Vandy, and so that's going to happen this year. $130 a seat. I think Vandy fans are all going to – they're going to just sell these things to whoever wants them.
Yeah, I would be prepared for a lot of crimson in the audience there. 2007, of course, the last time they came, 10 years, which is what happens now, unfortunately, with our 8-game conference schedule, which we could also have a discussion about that needs to be expanded to either 9 or 10 games, probably 9 in the conference schedule because you play – you know, Tennessee's going to host A&M, you know, like they did last year when they went to A&M. And then Vanderbilt will host Alabama once every 10 years, and that's it. You're going to play Alabama every 6 years on the road and every 6 years at home. That's once every 12 years you're going to get Alabama at home. So that's why why the tickets are so expensive. Also, a huge alumni base, obviously, in the city of Nashville. Good tickets, good seats. Right now on our very own SeatGeek, of course, $224 to $499 each So almost $500. So let's just hypothetically.
Not a bad seat in Vanderbilt Stadium.
There really actually isn't. But let's
say. You certainly won't be blocked by anybody at most Vandy games in front of you.
So middle, yeah. Come on now. I thought you had only good apples in that basket
only
over there.
Only good apples, yeah.
We'll settle down. But bad I apple got, over there. So
truth so apples.
It's $224 to $499 for good middle sideline section seats. So let's just call it. I don't know. Let's split the difference there a little bit and just call it $300. Let's say hypothetically you get two really good seats to the Alabama game for $300 a piece, right? So that is $600 total. Right now, and I pulled this up, I can go to Ticketmaster, which is an official Vanderbilt University account sort of managed by Ticketmaster. I can go right to the university and I can purchase two tickets right now on the sideline for $300 each for the season. So I can get every single home game, which, by the way, is actually a really good ticket right now. So I actually recommend if you're a college football fan, you're going to get one of the best teams in the Big 12. Kansas State's going to be a top 20 team in the polls when they come to town in week three or four. You get Alabama, which is number one in the nation. You're going to get Georgia, who's not only a rival, but one of the pick to win the East by some. And then you also get Kentucky and Western Kentucky, which are two teams that are very sort of, while they're not like true rivalries, those are two decent teams in the area, sort of local, that sort of have an opportunity to be a very high-quality piece of entertainment. So for $300, you can go buy a season ticket right now to Vanderbilt, which, by the way, is insane. Mm-hmm. $300 on the sideline, not end zone. End zones are $170. You could go right now and buy two tickets for $600 to the entire season. Sell your Alabama tickets and go to every other Vanderbilt game for free. I don't know why if the Vandy people are smart. Now, how badly do you want to be at the Alabama game? Because let's be honest, they have a chance to win the other ones, right?
Yes.
I don't think anyone thinks they have a chance to beat Alabama.
Is that why?
So
people
how badly
will be,
do you want to see number one in the nation?
I mean, that the question is, you got to weigh a few things here. You know, do you want to see number one in the nation? But if you're a Vandy fan, do you want to see what number one in the nation does to your beloved Commodores? Or do you want? But then you know.
But what happens? Oh my God! If it's what happens if they play well?
You know. But then,
what happens if they take them to the wire?
And aren't you part of the problem if you turn around and sell your tickets to the Crimson Tide fan? I mean,
yes.
Then you're creating part of the lack of home field. Whatever, there is no home field advantage. We'll just call it home field. Joy, because you can't really use advantage with Vandy. So home field fun, you're ruining part of that for Vandy. So you're part of the problem, but you're really smart and pure economics playing to this. We were talking about this in the break. Like I have put my deposits down for Raiders season tickets. And when they move to Vegas, I'm going to own Raiders season tickets. I'm going to go to two games a year. I'm going to sell the other six games. I'm the exact fan that Raiders fans are yelling about are going to take over that stadium, and they're a bad thing. But I will absolutely sell the first game ever. I mean, because PSLs are going to be expensive. So if I can make thousands of dollars for a ticket to the first game, I'm too frugal.
So you would have the money and then go to another game that year than actually be at the first ever. Your beloved Raiders in your hometown, you don't want to be at that game.
Oh, I'd love to be at that game, but not if I can make thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and get the rest of my year for free. I mean, that's simple economics.
Well,
that's where I think Vandy fans are. I mean, Vandy fans are smart, right? They're business guys. They're coming in and they're saying, okay, free season tickets if I sell the Bama game. I mean,
right,
you've
exactly.
talked me into it. I think I know what I'm doing this
now,
afternoon.
Unfortunately, I looked at tickets for the Alabama A&M game. They were $7. You could get tickets to the home opener, Alabama A&M, $7. Of course, Missouri is not necessarily a huge game, but that could be a game when you're playing Missouri at the end of the year, second to last game of the season, where you're fighting for a bowl win. If you're 5-6 or 5-5 at that point of the season, and you got Missouri at home, that's your last best opportunity to get to a bowl game. That's a big game. So all of a sudden you go Western Kentucky, Kentucky, and Missouri all in November, where weather should be pretty nice and pretty decent early November. That's three winnable games. So there's more than just joy involved in going to those games. I will say this, though, unfortunately, about the home games for Vanderbilt. And this, I think, raises a more interesting question just about Vanderbilt expectations, because I think we've all been very much on the Vandy can get to 6-6. Vandy has a chance to get to a bowl game. Their offense could get better. All this stuff. They're going to play Kansas State, Alabama, at Florida, and Georgia. Four games in a row. And then go to Ole Miss and to South Carolina. That's a four-game stretch. Kansas State, who if people don't know in this area, is going to be a very good team, top 20 team, a team that could contend in the Big 12. Alabama, who's the pick to win the national championship. Florida, I'm picking to win the SEC East. And Georgia, everyone else is picking to win the SEC East. Those are four really physical games. Vanderbilt's entire season could be decided in those four games. And if they can get one win, I think they've set themselves up for an opportunity to get to a bowl game, because then you go to Ole Miss and to South Carolina after that. So that is a six-game stretch where Vanderbilt's talent and sort of depth are going to be tested in a big, big, big way. So sell your season tickets to – or buy season tickets, $300 a piece. Sell your tickets to the Alabama game for $400 a piece. Cover your costs. Go to every other game. Have fun. And maybe your squad makes it to a bowl game in the back of the year where you play Western Kentucky, Kentucky, and Missouri at home, and you see three wins. That seems like a win for everybody.
It is, but it raises an interesting question, because it means we're holding Vandy to a very different standard than we would hold, for example, the Titans. And I'll explain that. We'll do that on the other side. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.